Our service today is a little different than usual. Two of our staff are away, Michelle Cote and Mike Fitzer, our director of music, so we don't have the usual choir setup, although we are very appreciative that some members of our choir have come to do some singing for us today. We also have some wonderful people at this service. It's Kathy Haverly, who's filling in for our director of religious education today. In your order of service, if you've not already found it, you'll see a colored autumn leaf. The leaf is there so that you can write the name of a deceased loved one, or more than one name, in whose memory you bring to the service today. During the piece that will follow, it's an opportunity, if you haven't already brought forward a picture or a momentum or a leaf, to do so at this time. A couple of our worship committee helpers will be up here to help you place them. You can add flowers to create our beautiful altar of remembrance. And at the end of the service today, we're going to plant daffodils in front of the church in memory of those deceased loved ones who we bring with us today. And in the spring, when these bulbs bloom, we will print the names of those people on the leaves, whose names on the leaves, to show who those daffodils are rising up for in the spring. So we hope you'll join us for that as well. You'll find that some of our usual elements of our service are not there today, so we can accommodate this special service. They will return next week. And now I'd like to invite the Coffee House Committee forward to light our chalice. Each week we have a different group that comes forward, and this is a way for you to get to know people who are involved in different aspects of the life of the church. Today we light our chalice, the symbol of our Unitarian Universalist faith, in honor of the lives of those family members and good friends who have gone before us. The light of their life continues to shine, though it be from a distant shore. The preciousness of their lives still casts about us its radiance. In memory, we carry a spark from their flame in our hearts. So long as we live, they too shall live, because we remember them.
How They Do Live On, written by Frederick Beeker. Excuse me. How they do live on, those giants of our childhood, and how well they manage to take even death in their stride, because although death can put an end to them right enough, it can never put an end to our relationship with them. Wherever or however else they may have come to life since, it is beyond a doubt that they live still in us. Memory is more than a looking back to a time that is no longer. It is a looking out into another kind of time altogether, where everything that ever was continues, not just to be, but to grow and change with the life that is in it still. The people we loved, the people who loved us, the people who, for good or ill, taught us things. Dead and gone though they may be, as we come to understand them in new ways, it is as though they come to understand us. And through them, we come to understand ourselves in new ways too. Who knows what the communion of saints means? But surely it means more than just that we are, all of us, haunted by ghosts. Because they are not ghosts, these people we once knew. Not just echoes of voices that have years since ceased to speak, but saints in the sense that through them something of the power and richness of life itself not only touched us once long ago, but continues to touch us. To think of them is a matter of not only remembering them as they used to be, but of seeing and hearing them as in some sense they are now. If they had things to say to us then, they have things to say to us now too.
Those who came before us are a light for us. They are a beacon. And in honor of their light and how it still burns, we will light candles as we speak the names of those who've gone before. I'd like to invite Lisa Garden and Lisa Martino to come up and light our candles. And as they do, I invite you all to speak the names of those people you wrote on the leaves or any other names that you would like to have remembered in our service today. Thomas Richner. We hold them all in our hearts as their light continues to shine among us. Next Wednesday is All Souls Day. It's a day when many people around the world pause to remember the dead. Of course, as the words that we shared during our chalice lighting this morning remind us, we remember those who've gone before in all seasons of the year and in all different times in our lives. But this day is a special day to remember them. It's a day observed in many different ways and in many different religious traditions, from Christian to pagan. Other world religions have similar holidays, but perhaps at a different time of the year. These traditions may all teach different things about death and immortality, but all seem to agree that there is value for those of us who live on to take time to remember those individuals who have touched our lives with theirs, but are no longer with us. You know, the word remembering itself is an interesting word. If we go back to the Latin root, it simply means to be mindful of or to bring to mind again. But I like to think of the word in even a stronger and more physical way. It seems to me that when we remember the dead, we put them back together again. We put flesh back on their bones and breath back in their lungs and smiles back on their faces. In a sense, we bring them back to life and we renew our relationship to them. The celebration of All Souls Day is not about simply recalling someone from the distant past, but rather it's about engaging with them now. In the celebration of All Souls Day, we celebrate a present relationship and not a closed chapter from the past. On this day, and on every day when we remember them, they rise up again. I just got back from a short trip to Mexico, and the preparations for this holiday, known in Mexico as the Day of the Dead or El Día de los Muertos, is in full swing. Walk into any shop at this time of year and you will see skeletons for sale everywhere. Now, they're not like our Halloween skeletons. They are well-dressed and depicted doing all the sorts of things one does in life: cooking, being a barber, dancing, playing musical instruments. These calacas, or skeletons, are not intended to be scary, but rather they suggest that even in death, we continue to be who we are, not some anonymous, undefined soul. You see, in Mexico, la vida y la muerte, life and death, flow together. In speaking about the Mexican Day of the Dead, Margaret Atwood wrote this: in Mexico, they do this festival the right way. Bright candy skulls, family picnics on the graves, a plate for each is set, a candle for the soul. Everyone goes away happy, including the dead. But we've rejected this easy flow between dimensions. We want our dead to be unmentionable. We refuse to feed them. Our dead, as a result, are thinner, grayer, harder to hear, and hungrier. If we were in almost any Mexican village this week, there would be great celebrations with parades and smiling images of skeletons all dressed up in their holiday finery and playing instruments and dancing, and there would be lots of fireworks. Families would go to the cemetery, but not for just a few minutes of quiet and respectful prayer at the grave of a loved one. No, they'd go for the whole day, They'd bring a wonderful picnic feast and musical instruments, and they would have a party on the grave with their deceased loved ones. You see, it's not a day of sadness, but a day of happiness and renewed relationship. For them, the dead live on not in some distant place of their Catholic theology, but on this day especially, they're right in the village with them, with their families. They don't just engage with them in the cemetery, though. If you go to their homes, there'll be a sugar skull with the name of the deceased members of the family written on it, placed in a prominent place in the home. And on All Souls Day, you'll see a trail of marigold petals strewn on the sidewalk leading into the house. That's to remind the departed soul the way home, just in case they forgot. The family will all gather, and often they'll make the deceased person's favorite meal for her or him. And they say the dead will take part in the conversation and the festivities of the day. It's a happy day when everyone is together again. Now, I don't want to suggest to you that Mexicans do not mourn their dead. Of course, they experience the loss of a loved one just as we do. They do their share of weeping and mourning. But somehow, they come to a place where they do not so much think of them as dead, as we just sang, but as just gone before and even still with them. So today, our dead rise up with us right here in this room because we brought them here in our hearts. You know, among us here, there are many different views as to whether or not everything ends with the death of our bodies or if our spirit or energy continues to exist in some way. Ever since I can remember, I personally have always had the sense that life goes beyond the biological limits of the body. And as I've been with people in death, that feeling has only become stronger for me. And for me, it's not based on adherence to some particular theological teaching, but more on my own perception and experience of the world. But theologies of afterlife are not where I'm focusing today. However, I do want to talk about immortality and that those who love us are immortal in another sense. There's no doubt that we rise up again and again after we are dead. No doubt that we will live on in the hearts and in the lives of those whom we love and who loved us. And that chain can go even to successive generations when we share our memories and pass them on of our departed family members to the next generation. See, the dead only die in the way I'm speaking if they die in our hearts. I think about the people who've been active in this church during the time of my ministry and who, for me, still rise up regularly. I still see Marion Fletcher around here all the time. Marion guarded our kitchen with her life. She kept it clean and in order. She was a critical part of every reception we held. And every time the kitchen gets a little messy, I hear Marion's droll voice saying, "Tom, someone did not leave the kitchen the way they should." Or when I walk in this parlor, room right behind us, a room where we often welcome new folks to our church, she certainly rises up. Marion never got to see the parlor finished, but she dreamed of having that kind of room at our church, and it's so fitting that the room is furnished in large part with gifts made in her memory. I think about how she was always greeting and welcoming people and introducing them to each other. It was her mission. And I love the story of the day when there were several new people at church and she was busy on her mission to greet them all and introduce them all to each other. In her zeal, she managed to bring a new man and a new woman who were both there for the first time on Sunday and introduced them to each other, and they responded well. They almost didn't have the heart to tell her that they were husband and wife. Marion rises up here often. And I often think of Ernest Goldman when a beautiful piece of music like we just heard in the Chopin is played on that piano. For as long as he was able, he participated in the prelude concert we have on Christmas Eve. And he always played the famous Myra Hess transcription of Bach's Jesu Joy of Man's Desiring. For me, he always rises up on that night and whenever I hear that piece. But he rises up at many other times as well. Whenever I see a very elderly person still fully engaged and enjoying every minute of life, I think of Ernest, especially at his 100th birthday party, or should I say, one of his several 100th birthday parties. One of my favorite memories of Ernest was when he agreed to substitute for our former pianist music director, Susie, so that she could take a Sunday off that she needed. He was a great supporter of hers and would do whatever he could to help. But on this Sunday, we had scheduled a hymn that was in a rock style. That certainly was not his thing, so I offered right away to change the hymn. He would not hear of it. He was going to cover the service for Susie the way it was planned. So that week, he came in several times with his metronome, and he sat at that piano and went through measure by measure and sorted out that music. At one point, he came to my office and asked me if I would mind coming in and singing it with him. And I did, and I know he hated it. But he understood it was meaningful for someone else. And he played it without complaint and treated it with as much importance as if it were a movement of a Beethoven piano sonata. Another person I often see rising up is Susan Russell. She had a dry sense of humor, you will remember, and she often arrived first on Sunday morning in her Cadillac to get the parking space right in front of the church. And this is true. Once we got a call asking if the Cadillac out front was there because some clerical dignitary was visiting our church that day. Obviously, the caller was not a Unitarian Universalist. But I told Susan the story, and she loved it. And we named that car the Popemobile. Every time I look at a painting of the church that hangs in my office, I think of Susan. It was an item at one of our fundraising auctions, and I was bidding on it. But then she started bidding against me. And no matter what I bid, she would up it. So I finally gave up, feeling she was just not going to stop, and it was really getting awfully pricey. At the end of the auction, the painting was presented to me with the words, "This is for you, not the church. The money is my donation to the church. The painting is for you." But when I think about Susan, what comes to mind most often is how she very quietly made things happen that needed to get done at church. She never wanted any recognition for what she did, so I will continue to honor her request. But just let me say, when I walk around our campus and see many things that would not have happened but for Susan, she rises up again. And by the way, that painting I mentioned was given to the auction by the artist, Priscilla Mercurio. And I think of her pleasant smile and supportive easy way every time I look at one of the several beautiful examples of her art that hang in our parlor or elsewhere in our church. She rises up often too. And you know, when I see volunteers to come in and help in the office, folding the order of service every week on Friday, I remember Betty DeFlorio and how truly when she was hardly able to do anything else, she saved her energy so she could still come in and do that on that one day of the week. And of course, I think often of our late minister emeritus, Don Kafka, and his wife, Vera. In my office sits a statue that was Don's of a Buddha. And more than that, I have books that he gave me with such love, which have all his little notes in the margin. And when I look at them, he rises up. And whenever someone brings me fattening food I shouldn't eat, Vera rises up. When I turn on the beautiful lighting fixtures in the new entrance, I think of Tom Abrahamson. in whose memory they're given. And similarly, when I set up a room with our blue chairs, I think of Doreen Gibson, who gave those. And I think of Mario Moldari. Whenever anyone challenges me to a good theological discussion of what Unitarian Universalism should be, and every time I look at that clock right there, I cannot help but think of Ed Merrick. He loved that clock, and he guarded it and took care of it. As you know, it's a very valuable historic clock. He always made sure it had the right time on Sunday morning. Notice I said on Sunday morning. I think Ed didn't want me to know that the clock actually loses a great deal of time. Maybe he thought I would want to get rid of it or something. But he knew just how much time it lost. So when he would set it a Thursday night at choir rehearsal, he'd set it a good 10 to 15 minutes ahead so that it would be right on Sunday morning. I never caught on to this until I had a memorial service on Friday morning and panicked when I thought my watch had stopped and we were late in starting the service. You know, there are so many who rise up at church. George and Barbara Nagel have a presence at Friday Bridge Group. Bob and Ruth McConnell come to mind when I notice people talking about the joy they get from watching the birds. Janet Tyler, whenever I see someone who is really suffering in great pain, but still keeps a sense of humor and a good disposition. And there are so many more that I can't include. So many who are part of this church that are still part of this church. Why? Because they rise up here again and again. Sometimes I can almost see them sitting in that pew or see them in the kitchen or at a table at the fair or other church event. And I bet there are people who rise up again and again for you in your personal life as well. There certainly are for me. Not a day goes by in my life when those who were closest to me but gone don't rise up again. I've come to realize that those who've gone before me, as we heard in the reading that Lisa shared with us, still have a great deal to say to me, and I to them too. You've all heard me mention Uncle T before, and this week he always comes to mind because it would be his 105th birthday in just a couple of days. He was a famous concert pianist, particularly noted for his performance of Mozart, and in 1940 he won the Nomburg playing the Mozart Piano Concerto in C Major, K330. It was his piece, and whenever I hear that piece, he rises up. But there was much more about him than his musical performances that still speak to me. I feel his presence in me often when I think about those times, even when his memory was really fading, that he still gave me some most valuable lessons. One memory particularly lives on and has helped me even to articulate what's really central in my own theology. When Uncle T's health was declining to the point where Malcolm and I could no longer care for him in our home, we worked really hard to find him the best possible place. And we found a great place. But to get in, he had to pass a basic mental functioning test. I was with him during the test. It was not going well. He didn't get the date right, not even close. And he couldn't remember the name of the President of the United States. But then the examiner gave him a sheet of paper. And she told him he had to write one complete sentence. It could be about anything he wanted, but it had to be a complete sentence. Without hesitation, he wrote three words: God is love, period. And then said, "How's that?" The woman was in tears. And she said, "Well, I guess he's in." And he was in, and there he lived for quite a time. Whenever I'm called to meet the challenges of ministry with a theological response, that memory often returns to me. And my maternal grandmother is probably the other person who rises up most often in my life. She'd been a school teacher, and who in her senior years, I was her only devoted pupil. She sparked curiosity in all things, showed me beauty in art and nature and music, She introduced me to the piano, to liberal religion, and to canasta. With her, there was always something new to learn. But there was more than what she taught. It was the way she lived her life. She had a practice of always seeing the good in another person. She never spoke badly of anyone. And when a challenging person with some ugly behavior entered her life, her reaction was always to look beyond and try and find some good about him or her. As a kid, that frustrated me. But when I became a lawyer working in the criminal courts, either as a prosecutor or representing people who'd done some pretty bad things, the memories of my grandmother visited me. And to my surprise, they always seemed to cause me to find some bit of good, even in the most hardened of criminals. Now, I'm sure that you have stories just like these of folks who regularly rise up for you. As I think about my grandmother and Uncle T and all those folks from church, I realize that they were not just leading their lives in ways that intersected with mine, but there was something conscious about creating those memories. And I'm so glad there was. And I began to think about that in relationship to our nieces and nephews and the younger people who are involved in our lives. It's not just about the intersections we have with them now. It's about what we give them that will live on beyond us and maybe help us to sustain them, maybe help to sustain them in some way when we're gone. You know, I hope we're all around for a long time to come. But you know, this day is also a really good day, not just to remember those whom we hold in our hearts fondly, but also to think about how we might be remembered on some All Souls Day way in the future. It's not a morbid thought, and I think it might even serve to improve the quality of our relationship to others right now. When we're gone, our lives will still be speaking. If we are parents or grandparents who spend valuable time with our children or grandchildren, we will rise up in them. If we're teachers, we will rise again in our students. If we're musicians, we'll rise again in our music. Artists and crafters will rise again in their creation. A scientist in her discoveries. A counselor in the good advice given. A good cook in the recipes passed on. Even generations later, we might rise up again when someone carries on a tradition or discovers us in their genealogy or meets us in some item found in an old attic trunk. We may rise again elsewhere in worlds beyond our knowing, but for sure we will rise again and again right here in the lives we touch, just as those who've gone before us rise up in our lives this day. I think that when we're gone, we'll say, just as those who've gone before us are saying to us now, these beautiful words from Mary Fry. Do not stand by my grave and weep. I am not there. I do not sleep. I'm a thousand winds that blow. I'm the diamond glints on snow. I'm the sunlight on ripened grain. I'm the gentle autumn rain. When you awake in the morning hush, I am the swift uplifting rush of quiet birds in circling flight. I am the soft star that shines at night. Do not stand by my grave and cry. I am not there. I do not die. Our closing words are from the Reverend Charles Gaines. Memories are alive, unbounded by events of birth or death. And as living memories, we possess the greatest gift one person can give to another. Hold tight to the memories of those who've gone before, and make good memories for those who will live on after you're gone.